south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, just a couple of quick things here. Gringos who come down here and get their boots on the ground for a while start noticing things that they never noticed before, though it takes a while. It's as if for the first 6 months to a year we have blinders on. A good example of this is how so many gringos never even realize they have the so-called gringo advantage till someone points out a certain situation to them. A case where it could be nothing but the fact that some odd thing happened because you were a gringo. Then after you pick up on it, you start noticing it all the time. Like, for example, suppose you bought a green Honda. Then all of a sudden, for the rest of the next couple of months, you see a lot of green Hondas around, don't you? Something you never really noticed before until you bought one yourself. Now, speaking of cars down here in Latin America, soon enough a lot of fresh green gringos start noticing a lot of SUV, pickup trucks, and cars that they know aren't the usual suspects you can buy up in the States. They see a lot of makes and models that they've never seen before. But by the lettering and the way they're pronounced, they must be coming from India and China. Yet, in a way, they look so familiar. Some of them, from a distance, even up close, look just like those Kia Sportages and Sorentos. Others are copies and near clones of Toyota RAVs, Honda Pilots, Hyundai Tucsons, and Santa Fes. By the way, down here, Latins call Hyundai Tucsons Tucsons, almost like Tucan. And they call a Kia Sportage a Sportage. And they call Hyundai Santa Fes, well, they're closer with that when they say Santa Fe. So, next time you're up in Arizona and someone says, I'm going to Tucson, you can bet they were probably born in Latin America. Anyway, when you're in Latin America, especially in the big Latin America cities, you will see a lot of SUVs in the high-end parts of town, along with the pretentious Latin jerks that own them and their bodyguards, etc. But again, if you're in a parking lot and up close and personal to a brand new SUV, you just might see it's a funky name you've never seen, like Sanyang, Chang'an, Mahindra, or any of a dozen more, mostly Chinese names. And believe me, it's true, these things are almost perfect clones of the usual suspect SUVs you see up in the States. Though the Chinese haven't cloned a Mercedes or an Audi or a BMW SUV yet, I understand they're coming, probably next year. But as is with the nature of clones, there are always some deficiencies and details that just aren't perfect. And since Latin society never was big on details anyway, that doesn't seem to matter. All that really does matter is that they're vastly cheaper than the models they're intending to clone. For example, I'm looking at one right now in the newspaper. It's called a Chang'an. Sounds like chain gang, huh? Anyway, it's brand new and looks just like a Kia Sportage. And the price tag, brand new now with a 3-year unlimited warranty, exactly $15,000 US. At the Kia dealership, you can buy a brand new Sportage for around $22,000, and a brand new Hyundai Tucson for around $22,000. Now, of course, you're not going to see these Chinese brands in the U.S. Why? Like those three-wheeled tuk-tuks I mentioned in a past show, they just won't pass U.S. safety standards. Oh, by the way, speaking of cars, motors, and safety standards, I've been down 27-plus years now, and I think I've seen 3 gas lawnmowers. I mean actually being pushed around and in use. And it's not that you don't see them on sale at certain first world franchise stores that have landed here, like Sears, Costco, or Ace Hardware. You almost always see one on the display floor, but no one's buying. Why? Because you hire a machete-wielding gardener for 10 or 15 bucks a day. And he cuts the shrubs, trims the trees, does the gardening, and yes, cuts the grass with that machete. That's right, and if you're watching this on YouTube right now, you'll see a guy doing just that. So you'll see almost no lawnmowers. However, you'll see lots and lots of those gas weed whackers. Those have become very popular down here. So why weed whackers and not lawnmowers? Well, because the grass and the brush grow so fast and thick that lawnmowers just can't get through it. Unless you're keeping up with it every couple of days, like they do on golf courses. But as for the regular guy, living on a private lot or a gated guarded community or whatever, forget about having a lawnmower. So please, don't ship your lawnmower or riding mower down unless it's a sentimental old relic or antique from Grandpa. Let me put it this way. You guys out there know what it was like, at least you guys who cut lawns as a kid. I doubt too many of you gringo ladies out there ever went in for any of that. It was always a boy-kid thing to do. I'm talking about old-school 60s and 70s lawn-cutting kid jobs. I guess those became the jobs that Americans no longer wanted to do and were displaced by illegal aliens. Though some of us moved on to paper routes and others just dipped into grandma's purse when she wasn't looking. I know I did. I don't mean dipping into grandma's purse. That singular honor, or I should say dishonor, went to my buddy Paul, whose grandma was always leaving her purse around. But we'll save that story for another day. Now, when I was a kid, I made my dough somewhat the honest way by cutting lawns around the neighborhood, too. And I hated it, but it was $2 or $3 earned the honest way. Worse yet, I had a couple of customers who were purists. Now, again, I'm showing my age here when I say there was a time back in the 60s and 70s when Scott's push lawnmowers, you know, ones without motors, were all the rage, especially in high-end neighborhoods. Those expensive Scott's manual push mowers were considered an elegant man's way to trim a lawn on a Saturday morning. Yes, he'd even dressed the part of a genteel country squire. However, after the elegant man that bought that mower tried it and sweated his ass off after about 3 minutes, he'd hire a dopey kid like me to do it. Now, if in your past life up in Cleveland or Seattle, whatever, if you ever used a lawnmower, whether manual push, gas, or electric, yes, there once were electric ones too with extremely long, stupid cords. Ruined a few of those myself, ran over the cord, what else? Anyway, those of you who've done so, you know that if you don't cut a lawn in 2 or 3 weeks up in the States, even a powerful gas lawnmower will clog up and stall, sending out big wet clumps of matted organic junk. Well, that's the major reason why people don't have lawnmowers down here in Latin America. Since they've got no frost or snow, the grass just keeps growing like crazy, 4 times as fast and as thick as your grass and brush grows in the States. Not to mention the sun is much stronger, plants get more rain. And do realize that down here, most of us are really living in the tamed jungle, which is why you have to keep at it or it'll tame you. And that stuff just eats up and ruins lawnmowers. But weed whackers, well, they're generally used. You can put them into service anywhere. However, since Latins don't know the first thing about maintenance, or they just don't care, mostly because it was someone else, meaning the boss, who bought the weed whacker, then most of those things routinely end up in the shop after a couple of months of use. And they really take a beating down here because things go fast and thick. So who's buying all those weed whackers that are in the shop all the time? Why, it's local governments, of course, who have guys out whacking weeds in the boulevards and stuff. Taxpayer dollars down the toilet as usual. Though Latins are diehard gringo wannabes and many have tested the weed whacker waters. Well, every upper class and wealthy guy I've ever spoken to about yard work has told me he's had a weed whacker or two and they always just end up breaking. Been repaired so many times they just give up on them. So, in effect, the gardener always ends up breaking his new toy. Just like the cleaning lady or maid always ends up destroying the dishwasher, as well as the electric or gas dryer, if you have one. Now, I know some upper middle class and wealthy ladies who do have gas or electric dryers and have gotten to the point where they tell their cleaning ladies or maids, hey, listen, you wash the clothes, but don't put them in the dryer. I'll do that. And you know, upper middle class and wealthy families are switching to dryers slowly but surely because they feel a little funny that their bedding, lingerie, and unmentionables are flapping in the breeze for all the neighbors to see. To them, that's low class and gauche, but to us gringos and expats, well, nothing like the smell and feel of clothes that have been dried out in the air and sun. When's the last time you had that experience? But I digress as usual. Where were we? Oh yeah, talking about Chinese SUVs that have invaded Latin America. And it really doesn't matter if the SUV's any good or not, if it's rated the best or even worst in class, because Latins don't care about those things. They don't even bother to check or read up on just what people say is often the second biggest purchase of their lives, as long as you got one sitting in your driveway. The newer, the shinier, the better. Which is why SUVs from China and India are making a big mark here in Latin America. Not to mention zero money down. In fact, cash back offers have hit down here now too. And that's a first. Oh, by the way, the prices I quoted are for buying those cars in most of Central America. And note, in South America, often those prices could be double, especially in Brazil and Argentina. In other South American countries like Colombia, there's about a 35% import tax on new cars. So in the end, you'll find cars in Central America much cheaper than they are in South America. By the way, the prices I quoted earlier include the VAT tax. That would be equivalent to your state taxes up in the U.S. So bottom line, you could buy a Chinese or Indian SUV. They'll run about two-thirds to three-quarters of the price of the equivalent clone, the low-end SUV models you're used to buying up in the States. However, you won't find those clones up in the States for one simple reason. They won't pass U.S. EPA and safety tests. For example, the Chang'an SUV I mentioned, that's $15,000 complete, that Kia Sportage clone, that $15,000 price tag does not come with airbags. Yes, they do sell cars down here without airbags. Those are options. And as for me, I kind of think airbags, at least in the front, are necessary. So I'm looking at the ad here. It says they sell version 1. That's the cheap version, $15,000. It's called the Comfort version. And that would be in Spanish, the Versión Comfort. And they don't spell comfort with an M. They spell it C-O-N-F-O-R-T, Comfort. And it says this version has ABS brakes and sensors when you go in reverse. And it has luxury wheel rims and a rear seat for the baby. Oh, and for all you green vehicle lovers, in case you want to know, in my 27 years down here, I've only seen 3 Toyota Prius vehicles. Nope, you can't give them away down here because no one's got parts and no one outside the Toyota dealership knows how to fix them. But before I so rudely interrupted myself, where were we? Oh yeah, we're talking about the new Chang'an SUV. Hope I pronounced that right for all you Chinese listeners out there. Now, the fully equipped version, which runs around $18,000, complete, that would be tax included, that model comes with leather front seats. So then what about the back seats? Well, it doesn't say. And it says it's got a sunroof and 4 airbags. So there you have it. You buy the version with full equipo, that would be full equipment, and you get airbags. And by the way, even if you buy a brand new car, pickup, truck, whatever, of a well-known brand like Ford or Honda or Toyota, you can buy the basic stripped-down models without airbags. And like I said, if you're buying a brand new car, you want to have airbags, at least in the front anyway. So do ask, because Latins don't. And by now, I'm sure some of you are thinking, well, are these cars any good, these Chinese and Indian cars, like the Mahindra or SsangYong? Well, I can tell you this. When you see the ads on billboards and such for these cars, they always seem to stress or stretch 2 points, because they can get away with it. They say, number one, the motor or transmission or drivetrain, whatever, has been engineered not by Chinese, but by some first world design team from Germany, the US, Japan, any place but China. And secondly, they always seem to claim it's been stylized or designed by a firm that's located in a first world country that's very stylish, like France or Italy. Again, they never mention China. So can you believe that stuff? Well, maybe. Maybe part of the transmission or drivetrain was engineered in Germany or the US. Or maybe it was the gas cap or ashtray. Who knows? Maybe they hired an Italian guy to design the interior. Who knows? But remember, there's no proof or truth in advertising here in Latin America. You can pretty much say what you want and get away with it, as well as you can in China, I'm sure. At least when it comes to products that are for export. Because, in short, nobody checks those things. As for Latin American countries, they don't have an EPA that's measuring tailpipe exhaust or doing crash tests, nothing like that. So for anyone who's curious as to what it's really like to get into the cab of one of these Indian or Chinese SUV clones, here's a recent 2016 Car and Driver review from a well-known automotive magazine and internet site called Drive.com. Listen to this guy. He says, when climbing into the Mahindra SUV model XUV500, it's like a blast from the past. It's got mismatched plastics, dated designs, and wood-look plastic that's as fake as we've ever seen. There are also some shiny surfaces which, in the wrong light or in a tunnel, can reflect annoyingly towards the eyes of the driver. Overall, the fit and finish on both the exterior and interior is poor at best, with bits of plastic not lining up properly and some oversized gaps where there should be none. And it doesn't take much to push and prod a few of the plastic components to elicit an annoying creak or two. Then he says, in an era when even budget well-known brands have managed to sharpen their interior presentations, the Mahindra-style cars and trucks look and feel cheap, and some things just don't work. Not at all. Or at least, not how they're supposed to work. Opening the upper glove box, for example, sometimes takes a couple of pokes and hits. And if you strike the button just right, it'll come open. While the seat controllers are clunky. In short, the overall integrity of this brand is not great. And the seats themselves, uncomfortable and flat. Then he says, it's a shame because Mahindra has the right idea on some fronts, but the execution is appalling. Oh, and how about this? He says, also, the Mahindra manages to thunder unceremoniously into bumps and generally lumbers and wallows about the road. It's very inelegant and an awfully uncomfortable way to get around. And finally, he says, for the verdict, any amount of excessive glitzy techno equipment can't make up for the lack of detail and attention to the basics. And this car and the Mahindras in general have plenty of the latter. He finishes by saying, my verdict? Substandard driving dynamics, poor attention to detail, and gruff, underwhelming engines combined with less than stellar performance should take any Mahindra off the discriminating buyer's shopping list. Wow, that makes me want to go down and buy one right away. How about you? Okay, so that's what most all first world car reviewers are saying about these vehicles. By the way, I can't help but be reminded of the parallels between these Chinese and Indian vehicles today versus the Japanese vehicles that started trickling into the States back in the 1960s and 70s. They were getting crushed by the same type of critical reviews, saying they were poorly designed, tinny, ugly rust buckets. Yes, I remember those first Datsuns, Hondas, and Toyotas and Nissans well. Yeah, they were crap all right at first, but boy, it didn't take long for the whole thing to change. If you were around back then, you'd have noticed that by the mid-80s, they were winning Car of the Year awards. Took the Japanese around 10 years, but they really pulled it off. Meanwhile, they killed heavy metal Detroit in the process. So the Chinese and Indian manufacturers are still climbing up that learning curve, as the Japanese did some 35 years ago. By the way, an Australian expat I know says he recognizes quite a few of the Chinese SUV brands he sees down here. Though he gave another word of warning. These cars show up in Australia first. It's very close to China. And he says because the Australian government has very loose pollution laws, etc., many of the cars that would never pass U.S. EPA regulations enter Australia with no problem at all. But he warned that he's seen at least five Chinese car brands, SUVs and pickups, come and go in the last few years he was living down under. And he said that makes it very difficult if something goes wrong with your car. He had friends who bought Chinese cars and were pretty much satisfied overall, except when the dealers went out of business or dropped the model line. Why? Because they just didn't sell many of them. So as a result, many people bought an orphan, which is why you see so many oddly named Chinese cars for sale in the Australian newspapers and Australian version of the internet. By the way, he said you can probably get all the parts from China if you can speak Mandarin or Chinese. Good luck with that, huh? But where were we? Oh yeah, back to that article where the reviewers said the Mahindra should be scratched off any discriminating car buyer's list. Because you see, that word discriminating says volumes. It's funny because you see, no matter how much money a Latin person has, he's definitely not a discriminating buyer. However, you might not notice that until you've been down here a while, had some boots on the ground, learned a little Spanish, and have met a few upscale Latin friends who you'd think would be a little discriminating with their money. Well, they're not. Like I said in past shows, Latins don't buy what reviewers and critics say are best. They buy what their neighbors are buying or what they think Latin people con dinero are buying. Con dinero means with money. In fact, I can't tell you how many times I've heard a Latin person describe another Latin person as a person con dinero. Con dinero meaning with money. It seems to slip out of the mouths of Latin people all the time. And it always colors the conversation by making that person seem more important than they really are. Hey, guess what so-and-so, the one with money, just bought? You get the idea. Now, up in the States, gringos might be thinking that way, but they sure don't say it out loud. But Latins do. Which is why, getting back to what we were talking about before, if you're in an upscale, gated, guarded community, you'll see that there's a broken weed whacker stuffed in almost every Latin person's garage, a dishwasher in the kitchen that doesn't work anymore, and a vacuum cleaner in the closet somewhere whose motor has long since burnt out. Because the maid or cleaning lady either never changed the bag, she didn't even know it had one to change, or she tried to use it to suck up some water, dog poop, vomit, or worse. So then how did all those upscale Latins in your community end up accumulating all that first world junk that once worked fine? Well, it all starts something like this. One day in that upscale development, some Latin neighbor who's seen a weed whacker on a U.S. cable TV show, or spotted some gardener using one in a high-class development, he sees they're now stocking them at Costco, buys one for his gardener who gets a couple of good months out of it, and soon enough, the neighbors hear the racket, saw that he was using this new contraption, and they just have to have one too. And because of harsh conditions and lack of maintenance, soon enough, it's back and forth to the repair shop, and the gardener gives up on it and goes back to his machete. And it ends up with the cobwebs and the spiders in the corner of the garage along with the Abmaster and the melted power juicer that the maid packed with coffee beans because she thought it could grind them. So for the gardener, it's back to the tried and true machete, and for the family, back to instant coffee. Yuck. All right, now I'd like to read from an article in Spanish. I'll translate here. It says, "Why are Latin American national health care systems so crappy?" It says they're well-funded, they get plenty of money from their own governments, from the World Bank and the United Nations and such, plus continuous donations from charity and do-gooder groups. Yet there are shortages of everything, disposables, medicines, you name it. Well, this article goes on to say that governments just don't do any audits, not at all. And when private organizations come in to help and offer that help, money, supplies, etc., on condition that they get to do their own audits, government hospital officials actually refuse. They don't want to get audited. Sound familiar? Like maybe when Ron Paul got stonewalled when he wanted to audit the Fed? However, on the rare occasion, audits do happen at government institutions in Latin America. And here's the results of one such public hospital audit. It was discovered that out of 182 hospital employees, 104 of them, about 58% of them were wives, husbands, daughters, brothers, uncles, aunts, cousins, and in-laws of the very same family. And of those 182 employees, 47 of them, what's that, more than 25%, were plazas fantasmas. That would be ghost jobs, jobs that exist, but no one actually goes to work, though someone collects a paycheck. Oh, and by the way, this is a fairly new hospital, so they went over the construction records of the hospital, and here's what they found. The 59 toilets they bought, that would cost around $50 each at a local hardware store, were bought through a politically connected contracting company for $500 each, a cool 1,000% markup, and 107 doors made out of pressed wood, that's MDF, that would be real cheap crap, were bought at around $550 each, and at the local hardware store right down the street, the same doors cost $60. Another nearly 1,000% markup. Sounds a lot like a purchase order for a $500 toilet seat for the U.S. Defense Department. You might remember that from the Grace Commission report in Reagan's day. So, then after this corrosive public hospital audit, what's going to change? Absolutely nothing. As one employee said off the record, "Nothing will happen because almost all of these hospital jobs are patronage jobs. They always go to the helpers and sympathizers of a particular political party. So we can say, in some instances anyway, that Latins have achieved some of their first world objectives quite admirably. And they confirm over and over again, government workers and government contractors are nothing but big, slimy, malignant pus bags. And I do mean that in the most heartfelt Christian way. While I'm at it, on the same page of this newspaper, there's a big ad for, you'll never guess, Guns N' Roses, with the overweight and oversensitive Axl Rose himself. So, if you've got boots on the ground down here, you can catch their Latin American tour, starting on the 27th October in Peru, working their way around Brazil, where they're going to do 5 cities, and then Argentina, Chile, Colombia, and on through Central America, ending on the 26th of November in Costa Rica. So for all of you 80s and 90s rockophiles and hairband aficionados, if you don't think there's anything to do here in Latin America, well, think again. Yes, the lag time effect for classic rock has kicked in. You'll no longer have to hang out at the oldies stage at the Ohio State Fair. You can see old Axl Rose and the other Gandalfs of rock in pretty much any large Latin American city near you. Only problem is, for you discriminating rockers out there, if you go to see one of your favorite U.S. dinosaur rock bands, you have to get over the fact that all the Latin folks around you are tremendous gringo wannabes. They'll all be wearing first world clothes, first world t-shirts, and singing along to all the oldie moldy hits in English with bad Spanish accents. By the way, I find it difficult to attend those concerts myself because Latins just love to sing along to every single song at high volume too. And what are you there for? To hear the original group sing and perform it the way it's supposed to be done. You're not there to see some neo-gothic Spanish dweeb with a spiked hairdo sing his version of Mark Knopfler's Walk of Life, or Clapton's Layla, or how about The Wall by Pink Floyd? Worse yet, McCartney's Live and Let Die. How'd you like to hear that in a bad Spanish accent? At the time, that was so wrong, the guy really needed to get tased. Sadly, I didn't have one on me at the time. By the way, it never fails. Guys and groups of guys like that always end up sitting next to me. However, if you can put up with the audience, there are some very distinct advantages for gringos who attend concerts in Latin America. You'll find that 95% of the places that these former supergroups will be touring are way off the gringo tourist trail. And that's a very good thing, because chances are, there'll be so few gringos in the audience. You just might be taken for a celebrity gringo yourself. Don't laugh, I've seen it happen, and if it happens to you, just roll with it. And if they ask who you are, tell them you're Ted Nugent or Meatloaf on a diet, whatever works for you. Better yet, if you want to see old Axl Rose up close and bulbous, Photoshop yourself an international press ID, a press pass, and work your way backstage. Expat Eddie got away with it at both a Jethro Tull and an Aerosmith concert. And finally, the other day, I had one of the biggest laughs I think I had in a long, long time. I was watching the nightly news. Latin American nightly news in Spanish, of course, and they were showing a prison in El Salvador, and the camera crew went to a certain spot in the prison where people were lined up to get prison tats. And wouldn't you know it, the guy doing the tats was a 40-something blonde-haired gringo. This guy was a real artist. Turns out, he explained in Spanish, of course, he was one of three gringos in the place, two in for big-time drug charges, and he was in for killing his girlfriend. And he said nearly 100% of his client base, yeah right, his client base, wanted tattoos in English. Turns out even Latin gang members and convicts are gringo wannabes. How about that? And he had on the back wall some photos and illustrations of some of the weirdest and best tats that he'd done. Then he signaled a huge, mean-looking, muscular guy to come over. In fact, he was missing a finger and part of his ear, too. On his back was the Terminator. And on the front of his chest, get this, it said, World's Greatest Mom. I'm not kidding. Who's going to argue with that?
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.